Well, folks, it's my great pleasure to once again welcome into the studio three members of the distinguished panel assembled for another edition of Valley Edition. On my left is Mark Kelsey. Welcome, Mark.
Good morning, Mike.
In the center, as usual, is Charles Hayes. Welcome, Charles.
Thanks, Mike.
And over there on the right is none other than Terry Snyder. Welcome, Terry.
Or the left, if you're on my side.
Well,
morning, Mike.
It's all about perspective, isn't it? It's all about perspective. Well, it's hard not to start at, I'll use the term, the top, by thinking about and pausing a moment about what has happened in the week past at the national level in Washington, D.C. And I think the in many respects, as we're talking today, there's still a digestion problem. As people look at a news conference that went on for, was it 77 minutes? And which has still left people trying to stop shaking their heads, trying to understand what had happened. And I'm curious, many of us have observed news conferences, maybe participated in them, either asking questions and or being asked questions. Who'd like to take a stab at maybe a quick reaction summary?
I'll start with the 50,000, the view from 50,000 feet, if you will. It just, and I saw it. It just was breathtaking in its scope and lack of focus. It was all over the place. It was whirlwind. It was just staccato, just like all these things. It was just left me feeling like my head was spinning. There were some great moments, some good indications that the press corps, for example, won't just sit idly by and let anything go that comes out of the president's mouth. Lots and lots of stuff there. I will stop. I'll let my two friends here weigh in on more specifics, but it was certainly a sight to behold.
Right. Charlie, what do you think?
One of the most notable things to me is the reaction of the hard right. They think he has nailed it. They think that that press conference was wonderful. And here I am thinking that the man is borderline insane and can't believe that this is actually our president. If you read the material that the people on the hard right are writing about this, how they think he is still like he is running a finely oiled machine,
as
it's
he
scary.
Said.
I just got a survey, and it is an email from the Trump administration about the media. And this whole thing, all the questions, there must have been 20, 30 questions, and all of them are aimed at a hostile media. I mean, they're phrased in such a way that you take issue with the media and that you know that the media is trying to pull something over on
you. Oh, is this the Media Accountability Survey?
Yeah,
I've seen that floating around.
I mean, for God's sakes.
Yeah.
I mean, it's scary. I mean,
Terry.
Well, you know, I think that David Brooks's article in the Times today just said everything that I wanted to say. When, you know, when he said, you know, it careened past unhinged, unmoored, and unglued. That pretty much said it. And I think what Mark had to say, I really sort of was inspired by watching the journalists actually get up there and ask him as hard of questions as they could get away with, but also covering each other's back. That's what we need to do as a country right now, because the hard right that Charlie's referring to is 35% of the population. This is a president who was elected by at electoral college. There's still 2.5 million or 3, depending on how you're going to count, of people that did not vote for him. So 35% of the people still love him. He was talking to his base, and he's going to continue to talk to his base. But to go to war with the media, someone reminded me, the last two presidents that went to war with the media, one was impeached and the other one resigned. That is just foolhardy. And but he's not a guy to make peace with people that ask him and question him and what he's doing and who his ethra of people around him are. And that's going to be a problem with him from here on out. So I don't see it going any. I don't know where it'll end. David Brooks also doesn't say he doesn't know, but it's not going to end well.
So you watched the performance, and one thing that stuck out in my mind was something, a question that began, it was a young journalist for a Jewish paper who initially and later on said, I began this, I spent a lot of time crafting the question, and I wanted to compliment the president and then ask a question, since there's a concern in the Jewish community about a number of attacks that have occurred recently. And as he began doing it, he was cut off. And it appeared, and later on as they processed this, it appeared that the president had not either fully heard or took offense at the bringing up of something that was going wrong, that in some way implied that he was at fault. Any reaction to that? Is that what you saw? What happened there?
No, I think that's very accurate. And it was the second time in 2 days or 3 days he had that same kind of question in the press conference with Netanyahu. I guess it was a day earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And he gave a wholly unsatisfactory answer, didn't even really address it, just talked about, you know, how he's some of his best friends are Jewish, and you know, it was that kind of defense. Did not address the question about the rise of anti-Semitism in the country. It was no surprise that he did the same thing the second time around. But it's kind of mind-boggling that what really could be viewed as a softball question and an opportunity to give a straightforward, you know, we are opposed to bigotry in all its forms kind of answer. Instead, he went off on this unrelated tangent that just really did nothing to answer the question.
So one of the pieces of information that I picked up earlier today was a reference to the numbers associated with the president's popularity. And there's been a number of reports that suggest he's not particularly popular. But the reference that came to my attention was, be careful, actually, President Donald Trump is more popular than Ronald Reagan was at this time in their presidency among Republicans. So if you think about that a bit, there's a large group of people who are identified as Republicans, and they consider him to be doing a better job than if we had the same reference back in Reagan's presidency and was true there. This is a kind of an important, it was suggested this was very important to deal with the question when we refer to the president as speaking to his base. This is a pretty heavily committed base. Don't know about the total size of that base, but it is a committed base at this point. Terry.
I think that's misleading, because I think it's a completely different country than it was under the time of Ronald Reagan. This is a much more polarized, divided country. And everything I've seen is says 35% of the people are really for him.
Overall.
But still, I still think because the country is so much more polarized, it's really kind of apples and oranges.
Mark? I think there's also the context of the times. Reagan got elected following a Republican administration. There was a tough primary battle between him and Ford.
Mm-hmm.
So there were, you know, pockets of loyalty already. So there were, I'm sure, still some, you know, sore feelings among Ford supporters. So it took them a while to warm up to Reagan, quite possibly. So, yeah, I think while it's interesting to ponder the straight side-by-side poll numbers, there's probably more at play there than appears.
The big difference today is social media has, in effect, retribalized the world.
That's a really
Everybody's gone into their own groups and becoming revved up and more ideologically lit towards the where they're leaning in the first place. I mean, everybody's getting more radical.
Well, this is Mike Malevsky, and I'm here with three panelists as we discuss the view from Washington, D.C., or the view of Washington, D.C. The reason why we've started with this and are spending some time is because what I'm picking up on the streets and the coffee houses and so on, that more than in past cases that I can remember, there is a focus of attention, a discussion involving what's happening in Washington at this early part of the presidency. Any sense of how you would compare this to either the beginning of the Obama administration 4 years ago or 8 years ago, thinking back to all of that? Given the change that Charles has pointed out in social media, has that facilitated a more widespread discussion? And perhaps given the difference, the different approach this president is taking in his first days in office, is that also, and some concerns that people have when they look at a, what we kindly called a non-traditional press conference? What do you see?
Well, they might be minor comparisons, but there's nothing like this ever before in my lifetime. And I'm getting ready to turn 74.
Okay. Okay. Well, I think you're in good company, Charles. There are many people who are also beginning to feel that this is truly different. And depending upon different perspectives, you may think this is, there are some people who think this is a good thing. There are many people who have varying degrees of concern. Let's bring this back, though, to say, given all of that attention, and perhaps think about your own day. In the past, there things happen locally. They happen in the city of Palmer. They happen in the state. We've got the beginning of a session down in Juneau that presumably has some very important things to decide. We still have an ongoing budget deficit. I'm almost beginning to think, though, that we can talk about it as the air being sucked out of the room by the concerns about Washington. And I know that people in Juneau are doing work. We get some reports from time to time. But I'm wondering if what is ongoing in Washington is going to affect the way in which we here in the state pay attention to the legislative process as it's going on. Carrie.
Well, it's definitely distraction, which is really unfortunate because what's going on here affects our daily lives much more, especially when you have an administration sort of at war with everybody. They're not going to get a lot accomplished. So really, it is way past time we accomplish things here. I mean, we have a fiscal crisis that is looming, and we have one side of the coin, the House, who's seems to be putting a plan out there and looking for input from citizens, and the Senate, who's holding far fast not to do anything this year, which, will probably put us deeper into recession than we already are. So people should be paying attention. This is the time. It's hard because this sideshow, that carnival that's going on, is hard to take your eyes off. But it's important that we pay attention. It's a 90-day session, likely to run over, but still, there's a limited amount of time. They can make some fundamental changes that are really going to affect the cost shifting that's going to come to our communities and how our public education, how our emergency services, how our roads, just things everybody is impacted with. So pay attention.
Yeah. Charles?
I think the national uncertainty is contagious locally.
Okay. Okay. Well, let's just deal with one aspect of this budget solution that's being discussed because it seems to be a core piece. I saw recently that newly minted Senator Tom Begich, has joined with Bill Willikowski in contesting the use in a certain form of the permanent fund monies to fund government. I haven't had a chance to interview Senator Begich to get a sense about that. When I heard that, I realized, okay, this question and the competing options that have been presented about how to solve the budget crisis have either said yes to using a portion of the permanent fund earnings or in some way, or no, we don't want to touch it. Any sense of how that's going to play out?
Not with any kind of certainty, no. It's hard to look at what's going on and not be a little bit cynical about it. It's pretty clear to me that Dunleavy is angling to run for governor next year and will use his his budget plan as, you know, sort of the cornerstone of his campaign. There's been a lot of chatter about Bill Wilikowski running too. So this could be part of that. It's just, I'm a wait and see thing, I think.
Okay.
Well, I think also with Wilikowski, who's been a big proponent of the reform of the oil tax, this is one way to sort of force that question, is, keep the PFD in the people's hands and make sure that we're getting our fair share from the oil taxes. But it is part of a political pawn game, depending on how you look at it. And it doesn't really solve the long-term fiscal future of Alaska to continue to just dole out cash to, to everybody that lives here. It's become an expectation. It's become a substitute for livable wages. It was never the intent, really, of the fund, in my opinion, to just completely use it for that. And I think even the records show that Governor Hammond was sorry that he had dropped, that the income tax had gone away. So there was regrets when it was formed. So it'll be interesting to see. The courts will probably ultimately decide that.
Mm-hmm. So,
Charlie,
any comments?
I just think we need to go all the way back, the genealogy of oil royalty, and take a look for it like we don't know anything about it at all, and start from the ground up. Because in my opinion, and I've spent 40 years in the oil industry, the state has been taking the real short end of the stick.
Well, let's switch to another topic that involves the national, the state, and local levels. And, of course, this is the announcement that just came out here about an action by a coalition builder in the House of Representatives there in Washington, D.C., none other than our own Representative Don Young, who is joined with people from the opposition party, Democrats in the House, to say, let the states decide. And the topic, of course, is marijuana. He seems to be offering a solution, a way out of what has been kind of a crazy-making situation where the federal government has placed marijuana on a certain list, has made it difficult for people to deal with the banking industry. And he's suggesting, let's clean that up and make that happen. Any immediate reactions to that effort by the representative?
Well, Don Young really has very little to lose to come to the table on that. And Don Young's always been about big business. Marijuana is big business. Here in the state, it's in its infancy. And we're seeing a lot of small distributors, but the big business types are just waiting for it to get established. And they're going to come in and make a lot of money. So it completely falls in line to what we've always seen from Don Young. No surprise, really, to me.
Well, and I would add also that he has been, for a long time, a champion of states' rights, and he frames this as a states' rights argument. And in a lot of cases, he is right to do that, especially with the conflict between state laws and federal laws. At some point, there will have to be a resolution with the banking issue. Mm-hmm. So it's not surprising to me, given how Young frames it, that he's taking this position.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, there's another topic that has generated some heat. Andy Josephson in the legislature has been proposing a bill that would deal with a topic that, in particular, here in the Palmer area in the Mat-Su, has caused groups to argue against one another's position. And I'm talking about trapping. He's suggesting that there be a statewide trapping control, a law that would apply. He's introduced it. He's admitted that there are some things that need to be cleaned up about it. But he's basically saying the state should step in and make that happen. Others have said, no, this, again, should be a local issue that's settled there. What we do know is that this is a kind of a, I won't say perennial, but it keeps coming up as a topic. And as populations grow in certain areas, it seems to be more of a problem. Comment, Terry.
Well, I haven't read the bill in its total. I've listened to a couple of hearings, and I think Joseph might be right about this. It is a topic that is going to continue to be a problem as we become more populated. The problem with leaving it to the communities is a lot of them don't have any power. Only about half the state is incorporated, is unincorporated, so they don't have any powers. Same reason we can't have a smoke-free workplace law passed, because the legislature has to serve as the assembly for those areas. So I suspect it could get through very watered down, which may be the way it is. The framework, let the local bodies make it stronger, but we're certainly seeing those conflicts here, here in Palmer, and the pressure is really hot, really tough, I think, at the local level on those bodies, because it's friends and neighbors and to make those, and it's easier for them to make a bigger decision once the framework's in play. But I'm curious to what my friends here have to say about it.
I don't really have anything to add to that. I think you have a good overview of it. The one thing I will add, and I've added this in the past, is just sort of a little bit of wonderment about the need for laws about something that seems so commonsensical to me, mm-hmm. Trapping.
Yeah.
To me, the whole enterprise is horrendously cruel. I would hope that someday we'd outgrow the need to do that.
Well, and there have been some discussions already, and obviously if you've listened to or attended any of the assembly meetings, you know that this is coming back up again. In some respects, perhaps assembly members would, even though they would like to retain control, would appreciate the state taking some of this off their plate. But just a heads up, it's being discussed there. It's going to be discussed here at the local level, and we'll see how that plays out. Which brings up the last question. These are all important topics. When I talk about things, whether it's marijuana, distribution of it, or trapping regulations and so on. Earlier we mentioned something about the budget deficit as being a huge elephant in the room. Are we actually doing that? Is there progress, you think, being made on finding a solution to that? Or are people filling their time with useful but much smaller topics?
Well, I think the big solution is still elusive. There certainly has been some chipping away, but nothing that I've seen that amounts to more than really chipping and nickel and dime stuff. The big questions still remain to be settled.
Okay. So what we're seeing, some people are saying, is that this is going to be, if you will, business as usual, in the sense that there'll be varying plans and discussions and so on. But you'll still get toward the end of the session, and people will be still looking to say, well, we need more time because we simply haven't been able to figure out how to do this.
I want to say, though, that, I think process is part of is an important part of it. And today they're taking testimony, for instance, on Paul Seaton's bill.
Good.
For an income tax or a restructuring of resources. We know that we cannot, I hope people by now know we can't cut our way out of this and that there has to be some long-term solutions to our fiscal problems. Seaton's bill is a starting point for that. They're taking testimony on it. I think it's HB 115 today that from 1:30 to 3:30, I think, at the LIOs. And it's a good starting point for people to talk and give them their thoughts on whether they're going the right direction with a small income tax. And, small use of the permanent fund. Now, I think the problem is that the Senate has just dug in and has pretty much said that they aren't going to do anything this year. They need to study it longer. So how they compromise that is going to be very interesting. I'm not optimistic that they can. But I think that the way that the bipartisan body is working in the House is kind of refreshing this year. They are hearing some bills. They're doing work in committees. They're being respectful. They've had some interesting House floor discussions. And we'll see. Maybe that will shed some darkness over on the Senate side, and they have to pull it together and start functioning a little more cooperatively.
So would you say, having an opportunity to witness these committee meetings and so on, that there's a definite different tone this year, and more perhaps transparency and discussion of things that never saw the light of day?
Side, but whether I think Mark could be right too, that will it make any difference at the end of the day? But for me, at least, it's a little refreshing to see a little different mode of action, at least.
It requires great care in solving this problem. without leaving political fingerprints on it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
And that's the big problem.
So everybody's got to be wearing
still a lack of political will
gloves
there.
Gloves of some sort here, yes.
Okay. Well, and next year, there'll be an election year. So this year, it's a lot easier to, you know, walk away and not do anything. Next year, if we see next, in the 2018s, what we saw in the 2016s, it could mean some people could lose their jobs for not doing anything. So next year, they'll really have some boots on their neck. But this year, they could slide by without doing anything. This might be a rehearsal.
So as a last small comment, I noted that there was a report that a firm had been hired to do an audit of permanent fund dividend recipients. And it had gone out as a no-bid contract at the behest of Senator Kelly, and a certain amount was paid. There was a promise of a reference to millions that potentially would be saved, and the total amount saved has come in as being less than the contract that was offered. Do you think that kind of thing will be either memorable enough or be useful to point out that perhaps there are still things happening that aren't in the light of day when you go for a no-bid contract of that sort that are worth paying attention to? Mark?
Well, that will surely be pointed out by whomever runs against him the next time, whether it has any kind of legs and what kind of gerrymandered district he's in will have a lot to do with it, too.
Okay.
Yeah, I noticed I searched for his Facebook page to see what kind of comments he was getting after that. I don't think he even has one. I don't think Senator Kelly's that interested in hearing from people. But I would agree with Mark that it really determines on what the voters in that area plan to do about it.
Well, once again, we have run out of time. I would like to thank Terry Snyder. Thank you, Terry.
Have a good weekend.
Charles Hayes. Thank you, Charles.
Thanks, Mark.
And Mark Kelsey. Thank you, Mark.
See you next week.
Right. And for another edition of Valley Edition. Have a good week.